Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast have blown up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Monday, December 19th, and we have a ton, I mean a lot, of fun, exciting, interesting big games to talk about here on the Week 15 Recap Show. Joining me, as he always is, late on these Sunday nights, is the great Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. There are probably some people out there. If they're still listening, I feel good because they're not calling me the great Scott Pienowski. I got asked a ton of Ramondre Stevenson questions today. Was worried about his status, was worried about the Patriots. And, of course, you know, Stevenson looked like peak Adrian Peterson today in that bizarre Patriots loss. So, look, I'll tell you what. I feel 10 times worse giving somebody bad advice than I do about anything I do for my own teams, because I can live with my own choices. But I wish I'd give it out. I mean, I know I gave out a lot of advice that hit, but, you know, a lot of Stevenson questions were asked, and I'm sure I went away from Stevenson just about on every one of them because of the uncertainty. And that's what happens when you have a late game, right? I mean, that was supposed to be the Sunday night game. It was pushed back into the second window. But, I got that one wrong. Feel bad about it. And, you know, if you have something, if you need to vent, if you need to get something off your chest, I'm available at Twitter, Scott_Pienowski. Just remember, I'm a human being. But I wanted to own that miss up front.
No, but yeah, it's tough. Those like late games, trying to juggle that. Like I had somebody ask me today, you know, would you play like Aaron Jones is questionable. Like, would you play James Conner just to like not take the chance? And I mean, that's way less dicey, the Aaron Jones thing. And even still, I was like, you know what? Yeah, I probably would just play James Conner. I feel like those guys are in the same zone anyway. So I get it, Scott. Like and who knows, maybe Aaron Jones goes for 3 touchdowns on Monday night against the Rams and I look like an idiot. So those things are always possible. But, you know, I'll tell you what, Scott, it's Christmas week, and watching that Patriots and Raiders game, obviously before the crazy finish, so maybe I shouldn't say this, because we got a crazy finish there to recap. And then with the Cardinals and Broncos game in the background of that Raiders Patriots game, I thought to myself, this seems like a good time of year to really stop giving a damn about some of these like very unwatchable teams. I know like the Patriots are on the fringe of playoff contention, but my God, I'm about ready as we're going to head here into week 16 to like say sayonara to a few of these teams and just stop thinking about them. I'm sure you probably feel the same way, especially after this Ramondre Stevenson thing.
It's been the year with the league-wide quarterback play has been so inconsistent, and it's been hard to find offenses we can bank on. And you look around the league, there's so many teams using their backup quarterback, the third string quarterbacks who are playing. The Arizona offense got, you know, not that it was any kind of juggernaut anyway, but I mean, we were hoping Colt McCoy would play a full game. That went off script. I don't know what happened at the end of the Patriots-Raiders game. One of my California friends who's a big Raiders fan was just bombing me with texts afterwards. I could give a rip about this Patriots team. It's not going anywhere. Their upside was like 6th or 7th seed in the AFC playoffs and get smoked on wild card weekend. You know, maybe they won't make it to that. You know, they're going nowhere.
Spare us that watching them on wild card weekend get smacked.
Nobody will miss Mac Jones, and nobody will kiss. And it's just so strange that Jacoby Myers is the guy who made the boneheaded play, because he's one of their smartest players. He's a really good guy. So I feel bad about that. Maybe they forget what the score was. I don't know. But let's talk about uplifting stories, like a 30-year-old running back taking control of fantasy football like we all predicted 3 months ago.
Exactly right. Perfect transition into our first game, which does have one of those teams that theoretically I'm about ready to, you know, say goodbye to and not think about for a few months. But the Houston Texans are kind of demanding our attention the last couple of weeks. They take Dallas to the brink. They take the Chiefs to overtime. Pretty good performances back-to-back for the Houston Texans, but like you alluded to, Scott, the big story in this game is this: we might finally have an answer. We're always searching for an answer in the Chiefs' backfield. We might finally have one.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to come down too hard on Isaiah Pacheco, who ran well. He ran hard. Nobody runs harder for a 7-yard gain than Pacheco.
Yeah.
Lost the fumble in this game, but he still got 16 touches. But here's the thing. Jerick McKinnon, 10 for 52 in the walk-off touchdown overtime. He gets 8 for 70, another touchdown in the passing game. He catches a 2-point conversion. He's used on third down. I saw him at least once pick up a great
block on third down, pick up a blitzer. Mahomes was only sacked a couple of times in this game, did not turn the ball over. I cannot figure out how this game gets to overtime when the Chiefs, with overtime, they wind up with over 500 yards, and Houston didn't even make it to 300. There was only a one turnover differential. So I don't know how Houston cosmetically kept this game close. I don't think they played all that well. I think they did actually play pretty well in the Dallas game. I think they could have easily beaten Cleveland the week before, but this felt like, again, you coined that great phrase of the Chiefs playing with their food. Maybe there's an element of that in this game. But here's the bottom line. Jerick McKinnon, until week 13, did not have a double-digit fantasy point game in this season. And then week 13, he puts up a decent score, like 11 or 12 points. Last week, he was running back one. Not one of the running back ones. He was running back numero uno, 28 or so points. And this week, he gets into the 30-point club. And he's the guy. Pacheco's going to have a role, for sure. McKinnon, it's a two-man backfield. Mahomes only runs when he kind of needs to. He's not a proactive runner. I mean, he did have a rushing touchdown this game, but you're not worried about Mahomes taking a lot off the plate. And next week they play Seattle, who's a give. And I know people are going to say, well, what if the game gets out of hand? And, you know, isn't it more of a game script that favors Pacheco? We might have said that before this game, and it ended up being McKinnon, who was more of the circle of trust guy. I think they're both playable against Seattle. You would like somebody better than Denver in championship week, but we'll worry about that when we come to it. The 30 in a year where the Chiefs, obviously, they spent a lot of draft capital on Edwards-Helaire. He's out of the mix now. Pacheco was the hot guy for a minute, and he did okay here. I mean, he's still going to be somebody I'm going to rank as a running back too, but who would have thought the 30-year-old Jerick McKinnon would be somebody who, I think anybody who rosters him next week, unless you're blessed with royalty at the running back position, you're going to have to start him against Seattle, and I think he has 15 touches in his back pocket.
I think you're so right, and I echo everything, just pretty much everything you just said. A couple of things to add on here. You know, I think that we are, if your brain might still be wanting to pigeonhole Jerick McKinnon as like a third down scat back type, because that's kind of how he was used earlier in the season, but that's not the case at all. Like, if anyone's pigeonholed in this backfield, it's Isaiah Pacheco, who is only used on first and second down, and they don't give him any like, he's kind of stuck in that dreaded like empty calories carry role for fantasy football, where he gets some work around the goal line and in short yardage, but he doesn't have a stranglehold on the short yardage and goal line work because they still use McKinnon there. He doesn't get used him passing down, so he's sort of just between the 20s. Like, he's those type of carries. And yeah, you're right, he's good. I mean, Pacheco takes his 15 carries for 86 yards. Like, he pops every time you see him run, but it's just the role that McKinnon has is much more valuable. All 10 of his carries came on early downs, first or second down. 6 of his 8 targets came on first or second down. And like you said, we know he's a factor on third down because they trust him. And, you know, Lord Podcast and I were talking about this earlier, and he made the point that this is the way they used Jerick McKinnon in the playoffs last year. And I would say, yes, that's true. But also, I think McKinnon doesn't he just look really good this year? Like, he looks better. He looks like the guy that we all got excited about when he signed in San Francisco, because he was that athletic backup to Dalvin Cook in Minnesota. And now he's sort of fully spreading his wings in an obviously great situation.
And you might say, well, he's 30 years old, but is he a young 30? Because he's missed so much time and he's been on teams that didn't feature him, so there isn't that much mileage. Bottom line is this. He's on an offense that has Patrick Mahomes. He's on an offense where every team's first priority is dropping Travis Kelce. By the way, congratulations, Houston. There were 20 targets to Travis Kelce and Juju today. They were all completed, so neither one of those guys were stopped. I mean, you kept him out of the end zone, so I guess that's a small win. And yeah, I don't know where you come down on this. Yeah, so Kelce goes 10 for 105, no touchdown. I think it's ludicrous that some people want to get rid of the tight end position fantasy. I know Kelce's smashing the position. Look, if you want to add less random, take away randomness from your league, if you want to add more skill to your league, you want to add flex positions, I'm all for it. Don't take away the tight end position. That's such a gigantic cop-out. Let's not compare it. Some people will compare it to kickers and defenses. It's all luck and everything. No, it's not. It's just this is just the way the distribution has been for a few years. Usually there's a couple of guys who separate themselves. This year it's only Kelce. Andrews has had a down season. Goddard was great before he got hurt. He's obviously hurt now. Leave tight end alone. And people can decide if they want to take Travis Kelce in the first round next year, which honestly, I don't think I'm going to. I don't think it's an automatic that you take him in the first round because he's mid-30s. But getting rid of the tight end is not the answer. The answer is starting an extra flex player or two.
Ertz was great before he got hurt. Who's to say Darren Waller wouldn't have been good if he didn't get hurt, right? So Kittle had injury. Like, all the that's the thing that's been so frustrating about a tight end this year is that these guys that were supposed to fill in behind behind Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce. Andrews, obviously, you know, again, the injuries, that's another thing there. They all just didn't pan out, which is why it's making it look more miserable than usual. And obviously Kyle Pitts didn't pan out for a lot of different reasons there. I mean, who hasn't experienced some sort of pain from Kyle Pitts this year? I'm with you. It's like, we're going to quit. We're going to just quit trying to figure out tight end because it's hard. Give me a break. That's a weak-minded.
What are we working towards? Eventually, we're just going to have team offense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. People seriously say that, right? Like, which is, what are you doing? Like, what the hell are you doing?
It's you need, the game has to have nuance to it. You know, it's not just pick a bunch of field players. We're in agreement on that. I have nothing to say about Houston. I thought Chris Moore made sense. And if you told me he got 9 targets against the Chiefs secondary, I don't think that much of, I would have been like, okay, maybe something can happen with that. He only got 4 for 42, which is probably the low end of that range. But, you know, obviously Pierce is on IR. His season's probably over. He was a net gain for wherever you got him, but it's just kind of frustrating. You can't use him now, but there's not much else to see with the Texans. I give them credit for being competitive against the playoff teams, but there's nothing going on here for fantasy.
No, and that includes the Jeff Driskel cheat code. Scott, we were talking about this before. We won't talk about it in such harsh, specific terms as we did prior to the show. That's for the...
Yeah, we won't have the backstage discussion we had about Jeff Driskel.
No, we won't.
But what is he? I said he was the poor man's Taysom Hill, and you said he was more like the homeless man's Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
What I said. He played 17 snaps. And by the way, like, there was a scenario. We're not going to sit here like a couple old men get off our lawn on the front porch there, Scott. Although I'd love to sit down and have a front porch discussion with you someday. That's the best thing you can do in life with another person. But, I mean, give me a break. People out there like acting as if he was going to break fantasy by being a tight end. Guy's not starting for his team. Like, if Davis Mills was going to he was going to start at quarterback and you could play him a tight end, that would have been a cheat code, right? Because Davis Mills goes for 121 yards through the air and 2 touchdowns. He actually added stuff as a rusher, which he never does. But 17 freaking snaps for Jeff Driskel. He carries the ball 4 times. He throws it 4 times. Big whoop. Like, it was such a ridiculous thing. I get that it's weird and it's annoying, but acting like it was a cheat code or, you know, we committed some crime against not even we, as we always say, Scott and I have nothing to do with this, but acting like it was some kind of crime against fantasy, you know, humanity. Like, give me a break, bro.
That's what got me. Yeah, people acting like, you know, Yahoo has somehow done a disservice to the fantasy community. Get the frig out of here. It's so stupid. That's just, I reject that. We have the most intuitive game. We have great designers. Again, you and I do not make calls on position eligibility. And it was the Texans who viewed Driskel as a tight end at one point in time, which is the reason why he has tight end eligibility. So if anybody started Jeff Driskel and got like the tight end 17 week that he probably posted, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. You played a tight end. That's what playing tight end is.
You broke the game. You broke the game with Jeff Driskel. You know, it's awesome. But you know, you did break the game with Jerick McKinnon. I wonder where this was early in the season, because if he was doing it now, there's no reason why he couldn't have done it early in the year. But again, Seattle's up next. I don't care. Do not talk yourself out of McKinnon next week. Yeah. Like, oh, they're going to be ahead by too much. They won't use McKinnon. I mean, guys running back 1-2 weeks in a row, you're going to roll them out with confidence. But it comes down to who do teams trust? Andy Reid trusts McKinnon and Patrick Mahomes trusts McKinnon. That's good enough for me.
Absolutely good enough for me. All right, next game up here, Chargers 17, Titans 14. Man, I was getting a little nervous about the Chargers when Brandon Staley's calling timeouts, like trying to, you know, I don't know if he's trying to galaxy brain the whole 2-point conversion thing with Mike Vrabel, whatever, but the Chargers end up pulling it off. Not the fantasy game that I thought from Justin Herbert at all. He ends up going over 300 yards, beats his prop bet. That's great, but no touchdowns through the air. It was actually Austin Eckler with a strangely efficient performance on the ground. I'm sure he's going to be excited to talk about that on the show. 12 carries for 58 yards against the vaunted Titans run defense. But yeah, very strange fantasy day overall. Scott, what were your takeaways from this one?
Other than Derrick Henry, I feel like nobody did what we expected. I mean, at least Eckler gets the touchdown and was productive on the ground, but he only gets a couple of catches. This is a guy who's on pace to smash all these receiving records for running backs. And Herbert gets over 300, but nobody gets in the end zone. Nobody gets a ridiculous. I mean, Keenan Allen 8 for 86, you know, no touchdown. That's kind of a Keenan Allen game. But I thought Mike Williams was going to have a much bigger game. He needed that long 35 yarder in the final drive to even have a respectable score. I played him in DFS. That goes down as a net loss. If you needed Gerald Everett, you got hurt in part because Parham had three catches. I didn't know. Parham, a guy who we all, you know, all team preseason, right?
Oh, yeah.
he made a couple of plays. So, the you know, 31 points, it's hard to get a lot of fantasy juice from that. You know, even the Titans, I mean, you know, maybe you're playing Okonkwo or Hooper because you thought your offense would be routed through the tight end, and neither one of them did. 4 for 54 won't kill you from Chig, but it was basically Henry or bust for that team. I was hoping that Vrabel is going to go for two. I get it. Some people say, well, don't do that because then it puts the urgency on the Chargers. But the way the Chargers were calling timeout anyway, and maybe Tannehill was, you know, he left the game at one point on the golf cart. I think it might have been better for the Titans to not take this game to overtime. I think this was a good time to go for two, but whatever. They didn't. Chargers went down. They got the win. And every fantasy manager who played, I mean, I had Eckler at number one at running back before the week. I think I might have played him on DFS somewhere. That didn't pan out. It was just a game where everything came in. Henry did what he's expected to do. Everybody else came in under their projected total.
Yeah, and Herbert obviously throws two interceptions, one of which was literally volleyed back into play from a guy who is out of bounds. I mean, that was crazy stuff overall. So, you know, that and those type of plays are just going to take the air out of a game in general. But, you know, I'm excited to break down the Titans defense a little bit with Austin later in the week, because I think that's just a slept on unit overall. Obviously, the team, you know, it's the Titans are such a strange operation. They need wide receiver help in the worst way. But yeah, you're right. Nobody really did outside of Derrick Henry what we expected. And I would say Keenan Allen, too, of course, with eight catches. That's always nice to see. But, you know, the Chargers remain in the mix. The Titans have a fight in the AFC South with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll talk about that one later. But, yeah, very strange fantasy game overall.
Man, do the Titans badly need Treylon Burks? I hope he can play before the end of the season. I mean, you don't want to rush him back, of course. You got to be sure that he's good to go. But they just have no downfield component on the outside.
Yeah, and I feel so bad for Treylon because I've always said he needs a lot of like reps, needs a lot of development, and these two injury absences have just come at like terrible times for him. So hopefully he can get back out there and continue to build momentum to whatever's left of the Titans season here. Next game up, Lions 20, Jets 17. We'll talk about the Jets and Zach Wilson, but I came away pretty encouraged with the Lions that, you know, Jared Goff does not have the type of game we had been accustomed to over the previous five contests. Just barely clears 60% completion rate, gets like under 7 yards per pass attempt, but the Lions still find a way to win. I think that's encouraging for a team that's kind of on the upswing here.
It is. This is such a frustrating game for me. I locked in the Jets as one of my five picks of the week early in the week because I thought the line would go up, assuming that Mike White would play. Mike White doesn't play. The line did ping pong back to the Lions being favored for a while until the Jets were actually favored before kickoff. And I talked to myself into, well, the pick is really predicated on the Jets defense is going to control the Detroit offense. Also, I got in this long, I shouldn't say this because I'm sure it'll blow up in my face, but whatever, leave it all in. My podcast partner on the Breakfast Table podcast, Michael Salfino, he, for whatever reason, doesn't believe in DVOA, the Football Outsiders metric. Now, I don't take DVOA as gospel. I don't think it's like, you know, you drop the mic once you have the DVOA stats. But I was
almost
trying
no
to come
is,
up,
right?
No stat is an answer key. You know, war is not an answer key in baseball. Of course, baseball is a much more statistically solved game than football is because the context is taken out. It's batter versus pitcher. And even then, there's a lot of noise to these stats and everything. But my quest this week was to figure out how much has the Lions running defense improved? It was terrible early on. It's been better the last few weeks. And how do you want to measure that? Is it by fantasy points allowed? Is it by EPA? Is it by DVOA? Whatever. So I hashed out the DVOA. You can go to Football Outsiders and put up the DVOA for specific weeks. I said, well, what's their DVOA against the run the last 6 weeks? Well, it was like 14th or 15th, somewhere right around the league average. And so my point was that Zonovan Knight is not, I know his schedule gets really cushy going forward, but it's not going to be that easy this game. And Mike was telling me, oh, no, the Lions run defense is trash. And yeah, I don't care. It's been better lately in DVOA. You think it's like special sauce. It's ketchup and mayonnaise. I'm thinking, you know, I know all these people in the industry who I could quote DVOA to, and at least they nod in respect to it. And all Mike does is like criticize it, like I'm, you know, the Football Outsiders head editor or something like that. So we like got in this pissing match over DVOA, which is not fun. And then of course, Donovan Knight runs nowhere, 13 for 23. Now I know the Lions were devoting a lot of people to the box. They were daring Zach Wilson to beat them. So maybe, you know, some people, I'm sure Mike's going to say to me, well, yeah, big deal. They stopped Zonovan Knight. I mean, they sold out to stop Zonovan Knight. They knew Zach Wilson couldn't beat them. I don't know. I'm just glad that in this space I can say DVOA and not have to defend them for 20 minutes because it's just not fun. That said, I told a lot of people plays on him at night. Wasn't good. Zach Wilson got me scared off playing. You had to play Garrett Wilson, I think, and he was fine, but he got me away from Elijah Moore, who had kind of a middling game. The Jets could have won this game. The Lions stole it at the end. I think this was actually a positive game for Goff. The Jets, I hold the Jets defense in such high esteem that the fact that Goff didn't give the game away, he wasn't sacked, he didn't throw any picks, he didn't turn the ball over, that's a plus. You know, St. Brown had a solid game. The running game didn't really go anywhere. For most part, I just thought it was kind of more of a frustrating game for fantasy, but maybe that's because of the lead up, because again, I got in a 48-hour argument over DVOA that I did not enjoy. And I'm sure it's going to lead to another 48-hour argument that I'm not going to enjoy either. So there it is.
Well, I promise you, I will not argue with you for even 4 minutes about DVOA here on this podcast.
It's one thing I consider, you know, I'm more of a, I watch the games and observe things, yeah. And I use DVOA as a cross-check. It's like when DVOA comes up with something that's against my initial reaction or my initial lean on something, it makes me open the hood and it makes me, you know, investigate further and talk to different people. And this is, it's one thing I consider. It's one part of the recipe. It's by no means is it, oh, well, DVOA said this, so I'm banging the table. But I know this. The Lions defense last week held Dalvin Cook, and no, you say what you want about Dalvin Cook, 15 carries, 23 yards. A few weeks ago, they held Saquon Barkley like 1.7 a carry or something like that. And I know Barkley's not a perfect player anymore. The Lions running defense is better than it was early in the year. That's, I don't see how anybody can dispute that.
100%, because at the beginning of the year, by the way, I'm sure in DVOA, they were like 30th, 31st, 32nd. So even if they're getting up to the middle of the league in whatever stat that you want, that's a gigantic improvement. Just from a success rate standpoint, they're ninth best in the league since week 10. So, I mean, there's almost...
And success rate is a stat that Mike and I both agree is very important. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no, I mean, their run defense has certainly turned around. I think you need to look no farther than the guy. And like, it shows up on film too. When you watch them, like, they swarm to the ball. They get after it. Like, they're running. They're trying to... They're definitely putting resources together to stop the run. So I think that it validates what you're seeing in the stats there as well. So I think we can totally agree that this run defense has turned around, and they suffocated a guy in Zonovan Knight who's been really, really good. This run unit. Remember Breece Hall? It's so sad to say, but remember when Breece Hall was crushing in this Jets run game? This run game has been good all year. The Lions did a good job of stuffing it up here. And yeah, you know, with Zach Wilson, I watched a lot of this game. You know, he definitely didn't completely pee his pants all game long. His interception was probably one of the worst, like, interceptions you could possibly have.
Oh, God. I know Elijah Moore wasn't open. He threw it right to the line defender.
I mean, just completely.
He threw it so the line defender could get yards after the catch, too. You know, it was like a 30-yard run back. Yeah. In a game where points were at a premium and field position was important. Yeah, it was a terrible throw. I mean, somehow he got 9.1 yards per attempt. He made a couple of connections with Jeff Smith. Nobody saw that coming. And really, you know, talk about touchdown trolling. CJ Uzoma, of all people, catches both of his touchdown passes.
You gotta love it.
Not even the tight end you would have played on the Jets if you had to play a Jets tight end.
I know, yeah, just classic. Oh, it sounds like Mike White's probably not going to play in week 16 either.
Thursday game.
Yeah, so that's we'll probably get not another good game of Zach Wilson. And then that'll be really interesting. Like, hypothetically, they beat the Jaguars, who we're going to talk about here next. What do they do? They need to keep Zach Wilson in there? I don't know, man. It's a strange situation there, the Jets quarterback. I watched a ton of this game. They kept panning to Mike White on the sideline. It's like, it's Mike White. Like, what is so weird? The Jets quarterback situation is bizarre. But let's move to those Jacksonville Jaguars, who get a victory over the Dallas Cowboys in overtime. Jacksonville 40, Dallas 34. Man, I think I want to have a conversation about Trevor Lawrence, because what do we all agree is like the most important thing for quarterbacks? Like, you got to be able to elevate your teammates. Trevor Lawrence is absolutely elevating his teammates right now. I mean, Zay Jones, Evan Ingram, they're like two of the most productive players at their positions. And these guys have never been consistent producers for anybody before.
And Trevor Lawrence's ascension is one of the most exciting stories of the last, say, month of the NFL. And they're doing it. I say that they're one slot behind at receiver, right? And maybe next year, if Calvin Ridley comes back, and who knows with the rust and everything, what they're going to get from Ridley, but at least they'll have a whole offseason to practice with his new teammates and everything. Because Kirk's really a two, and Jones at best is really a three. Ingram has been really productive lately. It's funny how he has that blow up game 2 weeks ago and it immediately catapults him to tight end four, which shows you how awful the tight end landscape has been.
That's why we got to abolish it, right?
Yeah, please, it's so dumb. But that 2021 draft class, yeah, I wrote this last week. You know, I would love Trevor Lawrence to be at least like an Andrew Luck player, where he's really good, kind of like a front door Pro Bowl guy, maybe a down ball at MVP guy. And the Jaguars, I'd love it if they would make the playoffs. I think they're much more interesting than Tennessee is right now, maybe because they're more healthy. Throws the ball to the guys we want. The three main amigos in that passing game all were productive. ETN had a good game on the road. And look, I get it. Dallas maybe looking ahead to Philadelphia. It's an out-of-conference game. They showed you what's the maturity level of this team, right? I mean, they do everything they can to lose that Houston game. Somehow they end up winning it at the end in part because Houston just didn't want the game, I guess. And then they go to Jacksonville, where Dallas is the better team. Everybody knows that. And they find a way to lose this game. And so I don't think that speaks well to whether it's the coaching staff or just, I don't know, the focus level of this team right now. I don't know what it is. We all know what Dallas is going to do. They're going to be the 5 seed in the playoffs. And they're probably going to beat the snot out of the NFC South winner, whoever the hell that happens to be. But Trevor Lawrence, man, he passes the stat test, he passes the eye test, and he's doing it without a true number one. I'm sympathetic to Jones. I'm sympathetic to Kirk, but they shouldn't be the best receiver on your team. And they don't threaten the defense in as many strata of the field that, say, somebody like Calvin Ridley can do. So I'm really excited if they can get Ridley going and he can be the player that we all thought he was maybe 2 or 3 years ago coming out of Alabama. Now you're really cooking. But you know, Lawrence went to the season, new coaching staff. Urban Meyer's out of the building. If you all told us that we got what we got out of the Jaguars, which is they're 6-8, they're competitive, I'd give them a puncher's chance against anybody. That goes down as a win. Now, I don't know why they don't throw the ball to Travis Etienne. A couple catches today for 24 yards. Weird. I don't know. Why couldn't he catch 5 passes a week? They've chosen not to do that. But I'm thrilled where Trevor Lawrence is right now. And I think he's easily going to be, I say top 10. That sounds too convenient. He may be as high as like 7 or 8 on some quarterback boards next year, and I'll be one of the guys taking him.
Yeah, honestly, like at different times this year, the question was like, I never had this question because I like what I've seen from, like, he doesn't shine in like the same ways that even a guy like Justin Herbert, who there's all kinds of debate about how good is Justin Herbert or whatever. Like Herbert has these like mind-bending throws, and he did from the moment he hit the NFL field. But with Trevor Lawrence, it was the way he like avoided sacks as a rookie. It was the way he never, you know, stuff like that. Those are like quiet nuances of quarterback play. So I've always liked Trevor Lawrence, but there was times this year when people was like, is Trevor Lawrence a bust? Is he bad? Like the question is no longer, is Trevor Lawrence good? Trevor Lawrence is good. Now it's just like, how high can he rise? Like how high can he fly in the quarterback rankings? Like, does he get up to, in quarterback fantasy rankings and in quarterback like real life rankings, can he get up to like 7, 6? Can he push top 5 status? We'll see. Like, we don't know his ceiling yet, but we certainly know the floor is high. On Dallas, Scott, I don't know about, like, obviously, you know, the maturity level team, stuff like that. We'll never know without being in the building. But one thing we can definitely point to with this team right now that is a huge problem, everybody wants to talk about their wide receiver situation. You know, they add T.Y. Hilton. You know, Michael Gallup is just not really doing too much of anything. Odell Beckham's obviously still hanging out in the distance. Jerry's still talking about, oh, it's going to happen, he's close, whatever. I don't know about all that. We'll see. But the one thing that is a big problem is their secondary. You know, on Sunday night when they beat the Colts a couple of weeks ago, I wrote, oh, they're ready to make a Super Bowl run because this roster looks like that. But quietly in that game, Anthony Brown tore an Achilles tendon against the Colts. He became the second Cowboys cornerback to go on IR, joining Jordan Lewis there. Since then, the Cowboys have given up a 103 passer rating. They have given up 9 explosive pass plays in 2 games. Kelvin Joseph, the guy replacing the second outside corner spot across from Trayvon Diggs, which, by the way, like, wasn't a good spot anyways. He's been horrible. He got taken to the woodshed by Zay Jones. And again, I'm not trying to be mean to Zay Jones, but like, come on, we're not talking about, you know, Stephon Diggs or something like that. You shouldn't be getting posterized by Zay Jones on double moves, okay? But that's consistently happening at this point. And then, you know, Chris Moore just had 124 yards on this team last week, right? So that's a big problem for Dallas going forward. And like, you know, it's not going to show up in all the metrics, like, you know, fantasy points allowed to wide receivers, but this has become a very, very exploitable matchup for wide receivers going against Dallas, because that second cornerback spot, the slot cornerback spot as well, has become a huge issue for this team.
Well said. They're going to have their hands full next week with the Eagles, who may have Goddard back. They obviously have 2 star receivers. Hurts playing at an MVP level. So that's a big problem. Cluster injuries in the secondary. One of the reasons that Jacksonville is one of my strongest picks of the week. And they didn't do much against Lawrence. I mean, he only got sacked once. He only turned the ball over once, and he threw the ball 40 plus times. So Dallas defense is a heck of a, granted, we'll see how healthy they are when the playoffs run. The problem is that now that Philadelphia has run away and Dallas doesn't have much to play for, I mean, you wonder if some of these teams will pull back. And
yeah,
it's a good thing that week 18 doesn't matter for the fantasy playoffs, because I think a lot of these teams that are like Philadelphia and Dallas are just going to mail that final game in. But because of this loss, it takes a lot of the juice out from what would have been a really exciting Philadelphia-Dallas game next week. I don't know. At what point do the Eagles pull back too? I mean, you don't want people to get stale. You need to run reps, and tough. You just can't send everybody to Aruba for a month, you know. But by the flip side, you can't get hurt if you're not on the field. Yeah, Dallas's defense, man, that was going to be, you could argue, wasn't that long ago, the Dallas defense was like the better of the two units. And right now that certainly isn't the case.
Yeah, and the offense is not really good enough, like from a personnel standpoint. I don't think it's horrible from a personnel standpoint, but I don't think it's good enough to like be winning shootouts like this every single week.
It's missing that second piece downfield, right? I mean, CeeDee Lamb's had a really nice season. Schultz has been kind of hit or miss. I don't think anybody expected much from the T.Y. Hilton signing. You know, Noah Brown out of nowhere catches a couple of short touchdowns, but I mean, he's not on a championship team. I don't think Noah Brown's even really on the field that much. It feels like they're missing one piece. Like maybe we were hoping Gallup could be that guy. I don't know if he got hurt today. He only was targeted twice, but he wasn't a factor in this game.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have to talk about one of those damn NFC South teams. All right, next game up here, Bengals 34, Buccaneers 23. I'm so done with the Bucs. I just so done with them. They had a couple of moments in this game. Cute, adorable. That's nice. They still end up losing and don't even come close to looking like the better team in this one. Although the good news is a lot of the receivers we care about got in the end zone. And also Russell Gage gave us a reminder that he does, in fact, play for this team.
Yeah, Russell Gage, I tweeted elevating ninth place best ball teams to seventh place best ball teams with his best game of the year. it would take an act of Congress for Mike Evans to score a touchdown at this point.
I know.
The Buccaneers, man, I know they were ahead 17-3. I never felt like they looked all that good in the first half. And then I saw a tweet that I believe every snap of the third quarter was in Buccaneers territory, which is just crazy.
Wow.
But they kept turning the ball over. I don't even think really the Bengals showed all that much in this game. And Burrow, 5.1 yards per attempt. They went nowhere on the ground. Mixon 11 for 21, Piran 7 for 24. But the Buccaneers were like, we don't want this game. You want it? And since I was like, yeah, okay, I guess we'll win the game. That's fine with us. So Burrow doesn't play well. He still gets four touchdowns out of it, has a decent game. I mean, you'll take it. Brady goes for 312 and three touchdowns. This is one of his best fantasy games of the year, even though I never felt like he was really – he doesn't look sharp. There's a lot of problems here. The line is a problem. The aging core of the receiver group is a problem. Running game has been inconsistent. Fournette and White both get double-digit touches. Nobody did all that much. It's ironic because Brady left New England and went to Tampa Bay because he realized he was at a point in his career where he needed better support. He needed to be propped up. He couldn't be the guy driving the bus anymore. He was kind of somebody who needed to be on the bus. And I think he's maybe run as far as he can run with Tampa Bay. I think he needs a better setup than what he's got right now with the Buccaneers. And if he plays next year, I don't think it's going to be with the Bucs. I think this is a fair. We talked about this, I think, maybe on the preview show on a recent podcast, that I think it's a fair chance he plays next year. But I don't think it's in Tampa Bay. I think he needs more help around him, and I don't think Tampa Bay can offer it right now.
Yeah. He needs like a almost picture-perfect offensive line, which, by the way, those are kind of tough to find. So good luck with that one if you're going to play another year here, Tom Brady. The NFC South standings right now. The Buccaneers lead this thing at 6-8. The Panthers lost today, so they're second place with 5-9. The Saints climbed to 5-9, third place, because they beat the Falcons, who were also 5-9. Some team below 500 is winning this division and hosting a playoff game. And that's another thing. I'm not like a, we got to change the rules type of guy for these situations, but this one feels particularly gross because of how disappointing Tampa Bay is and how just, I mean, not interesting any of those other three teams are.
You and I wouldn't mind if you don't have a winning record, I wouldn't mind if they took the home game away from you and they let the 5 seed be the home team.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that. You still make, look, every division is represented. You make the playoffs, fine, but you get at least win a minimum of 9 games to get that home game. Man, I wanted to adopt the Panthers. They put a no-show from them today, and in the Saints-Falcons game, I will not be eagerly rewatching that game. I'm not sure I'm going to rewatch it at all, although I feel like obligated to because it was Ritter's first game. But I'm ready to pull the – I will be happy. And look, I mean, I'm a New England guy. I mean, I like Tom Brady, you know, and I feel a little bit defensive of him when people just have so much schadenfreude whenever Brady loses. I mean, people are having schadenfreude about his divorce, which is like, you know, check yourself as a human being if you feel that way. I mean, this kid's involved and stuff. I mean, you know, it's any marriage is like 50-50 as it is, you know. Relationships sometimes just aren't meant to go the distance. I, you know, don't be a jerk about that. But I'll be happy when the Tampa Bay season is over. I'm allowed to have disgust for them as a football team, and I do.
Well, let's just stay in the muck of the NFC South then and get that Saints-Falcons game.
Get over with.
That Saints-Falcon game over with. Desmond Ritter's debut, 26 pass attempts, 97 yards. But 70 of those yards did go to Drake London, so we'll take that.
Yeah, I dared him to be worse than Mariota, and he's like, challenge accepted, right? I mean, 3.7 an attempt. He gets sacked four times. You know, this felt like, okay, let's bring in Mariota, like, you know, and have him play at like 70% efficiency. That's what it felt like. At least they got their running game going. The game was quasi-competitive. Of course, the Saints aren't going to run away from anybody. But look, I guess it's – look, if you could tell me that Ritter at least is going to target Drake London 11 times out of 26 passes, you know, we'll take that because he's the only guy in this passing game we have any interest in. You know, nobody's playing McCole Pruitt. Nobody's playing Alamidi Zaccheaus or anything like that. So at least their usage was tight. You know, if you had to play Algier or Patterson, they both got touchdowns. They both got double-digit carries. It's a team that wants to run the ball. So you can hang your hat on that. Those guys are both playable.
Algier looked good today.
He did look good. They get the Ravens and Cardinals the next 2 weeks. So, okay. I can live with that. I mean, it's not the easiest matchup with the Ravens, but this isn't the Ray Lewis Ravens. But I was hoping with a bye week and with as poorly as Mariota had played recently, I guess I was just hoping Ritter would show something and maybe I missed it. Again, they did get 70 yards out of London somewhere. I'm going to rewatch the snaps because I just feel like I owe it to myself to, if I'm going to have opinions on Desmond Ritter, I got to examine him closely because this is not a game. I know there are only six games on in the early window, but I feel like this is the game I saw the least amount of.
Yeah, fair. You didn't miss much, I'll tell you that. The only thing you missed though was Taysom, if any, you know, a lot of people took
Taysom offense. Hill to Rashid Shaheed.
Yeah. A lot of people, Scott, as we know, took offense to the whole Jeff Driskel thing, tight end eligibility. The person who took the most offense to it seemed to be Taysom Hill, who's like, listen, Yahoo, you're going to give some other goofball tight end eligibility and quarterback eligibility? I don't think so. Okay, that's my thing. I'm going to come out and throw two passes for 80 yards and a touchdown, okay, and remind you who the real cheat code is. Taysom Hill, baby, with 80 yards and a touchdown.
There's another thing. We're talking tight end cheat codes. Okay, Juwan Johnson had a touchdown thing going, and then he got hurt, and he fell off the radar. And I wanted to play Juwan. I had some teams, like 90% of the fantasy community, I have tight end problems. I would have loved to have played Juwan Johnson, but just where he's been the last few weeks with inactivity, and this is an offense, you know, Andy Dalton, I don't trust him. I know his metrics are better than his play looks like on the field, but I would have loved to play Juwan Johnson. I thought about picking up and or starting him on a couple of different teams. Yeah. I don't know if it would have bailed me out, but I mean, man, 4 for 67 and 2 touchdowns. I mean, that's basically like Travis Kelce Jr. work from him. What's he got, 7 touchdowns on the season now?
Yeah.
Juwan Johnson, if he's healthy, man, I'm playing him the rest of the year, wherever he's. I don't care if they're up against the Jets and the Niners the next 2 weeks. I'm just playing Juwan Johnson and probably chasing points, and I'm going to get 19 yards and complain about it afterwards. But guy scores touchdowns, man. So they get the Browns and the Eagles the next 2 weeks. The Browns, yeah, he'll score against the Browns.
He and Travis Kelce are the only tight ends this year with 7-plus touchdowns. Juwan Johnson. Way to be. All right, next
tight end, right answer. Juwan Johnson, yeah.
There you go. Next game up here, Eagles 25, Bears 20. Scott, we talk about condensed passing trees all the time on this show and how much we love that. I mean, the Eagles, we've talked about them all year. It's like a nice and tidy offense. They only throw to the guys that we like. They took that bit to another level today. A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith combined for 307 yards through the air on 14 catches. No other Eagles player cleared 10 yards through the air. Miles Sanders actually had negative 13 yards through the air and not a very good game for Miles Sanders. I had to eat the 1.9 points from Miles Sanders in a league, and it's probably not going to cost me, but I thought for a while there before Justin Herbert didn't do anything, it was going to cost me. But I'm not going to be a lunatic and tweet at him about it, okay? Don't be that kind of lunatic. That's the worst kind of person. But yeah, Eagles passing tree ultra condensed in this one, in what was kind of a strange game for the Eagles overall.
Yeah, you know, the thing I look at, I don't know how many kneel downs Hurts had, but he finishes the game with 17 carries and Fields had 15. Fields was another guy I was asked about a lot, and I just wasn't sure how proactive of a runner he would be, but he was, whether it's in through scrambles or through design runs. But you know, both these guys run the ball a lot. Fields gets all the rushing touchdowns. I mean, for the most part, the Eagles, since Goddard got hurt, has made sure that everybody's been involved in the touchdowns. It wasn't like that today, but I don't think the Eagles, it's their best business model for Hurts to run this much. I think 5, 7, 8 rushing attempts a game would be fine. And again, I know there's probably some kneel downs to
looks
take
like
out
two,
of that.
Looks like two kneels at the end of
okay.
the game.
Okay. They're running him too much. And I think the Bears are running Fields too much, especially in a season that's going yeah. nowhere. I mean, at least the Eagles are like, well, hey, you know, we're trying to win the Super Bowl here. We're trying to be the number one seed in the NFC. Man, it's just so nice. A.J. Brown, 16 targets. That's something the Titans almost never did with him. I was just like, okay, you're getting 5 to 7 targets a week and you'll like it. It's just so nice to see him prioritized and their usage be so narrow. It's going to get a little bit more spread out. I would think Goddard probably comes back next week, although they have the luxury of easing him back into action. I was prepared to play Goddard today if he was activated, but at least we got the news early that he wasn't going to go. But I love the Eagles. You'll live with it with Miles Sanders. You have to dial him up against Dallas. I just think they're using Hurts a little bit too much of a runner. And I really think the Bears are you could develop Fields as a passer. And I get it. It's hard to take the athleticism and the competitiveness out of him. When he sees a lane, he knows he can rip off a 20-yard run. How you tell him not to do that? But I see this many carries in a game and I get concerned.
Yeah, I mean, look, fair enough, honestly. And it was weird too, because prior to the bye, we thought for a second, like, oh, maybe they're dialing back Justin Fields as a design rusher. Only 5 of his runs today were scrambles. So there was a lot more design rush attempts. And yeah, I get it. It's a way to create offense, but it's that push and pull. And he went to the locker room at one point. I think it was just for a cramp situation with Justin Fields. But yeah, no, your fears are warranted. It's just like, they're throwing a Byron Pringle out there, man. They got nothing going on in the receiver room. Like, it's tough to develop.
They're throwing touchdowns. They're throwing touchdowns to Byron Pringle, although that was a play. That play was all Fields extending the play, and then Pringle was just left alone, you know, uncovered like he had a, you know, communicable disease or something. But it's that was just Fields making a magical play. I'll say this: Fields is fun to watch. Really he's fun. Made a Bears team that's terrible quasi watchable. So I got to give him credit for that.
Got to give him credit for that. All right, we got to give the Raiders and the Patriots credit for the most insane ending I think I've ever seen in a game. I mean, Jacoby Myers, who has thrown some passes for the New England Patriots, literally threw the game away. I can't imagine that Bill Belichick's going to be real happy with Jacoby Myers after that one. It's like you said it earlier, it's a shame because he's probably one of their smartest, most consistent. Like, they bring in wide receiver after wide receiver after wide receiver in the draft and free agency, and Jacoby Myers just outproduces all of them. Well, he outproduced even Deontay Johnson in the boneheaded metric today with that mistake there at the end of the game, man. Unfortunate, but this game was rough all the way around. I mean, Mac Jones, he's pissed off out there. He's averaging 3.6 yards per attempt. I'm ready to be done with this Patriots team, Scott. That's for sure.
Yeah. Again, I take my lumps for the Stevenson call. If I had known he was going to be healthy, I would have certainly started him against the Raiders defense. I don't have a lot of high regard for the Patriots defense. Once again, they shut down Hopkins, which they always do. He never scores against the Patriots. And they hold Devontae Adams to 4 for 28, no touchdown on 9 targets. So Adams wasn't a factor at all. Feel bad for Myers. He's a team leader, one of the smartest guys, and a really thoughtful interview. I like everything about Jacoby Myers, and I don't know where – I don't know if these guys, did they think they were losing? Did they think they were down by a point or something?
Who knows? I think he said after the game that he's like, I thought I could make a play, which.
Okay.
Yeah, he did take like full responsibility for the whole thing afterwards, which, like you said, is a shame. He seems like a quality dude.
I mean,
quality
look,
player.
You know, the Patriots are 7-7. The Raiders are 6-8. Neither one of these teams are going anywhere. I mean, the Patriots may be better served in the long run. My friend David Pearl was talking smack about, oh, this is revenge for the Tuck rule. It's like, this Patriot team has no upside, and neither does this Raider team, for that matter.
Well, Chandler Jones got his revenge game. I mean, he hasn't done anything all year, but that, like, I don't know. Mac Jones got to think about retiring after that. just put into the dirt by Chandler Jones there.
No sacks, though. No turnovers, no sacks. Mac Jones' quarterback line just makes me sad. 13 for 31 for 112 yards, 3.6 an attempt. Nobody, I mean, Stevenson was fantastic, of course, and what a great player he is, but nobody else goes anywhere. His passing game has been in the trash can for a long time. And the Raiders, you know, they got Waller back. He scored a touchdown. Congratulations if you had the Raiders scoring three touchdowns going to Keelan Cole, Darren Waller, and Mac Hollins. You know, that's a, you know, if you hit the Powerball, you just won $78 billion, but both these teams are going nowhere.
Absolutely. All right, a couple other teams going nowhere. Although there, I guess there's still a chance the Panthers could go to the playoffs. The Steelers 24, Panthers 16. The Steelers ran the Panthers offense. You know, they just ran the hell out of the ball. 45 rushing plays, 22 passing plays. You know, I don't know what to say about these two teams. They just are what we think they are.
Yeah, I mean, at least DJ Moore gave us a touchdown. I thought Donta Foreman was going to be a good play. I told some people to play. Yeah, my good friend John Stagden, who I grew up with in high school. We went to the same college. He asked me about Kenneth Walker versus Donta Foreman. When Walker had kind of a lukewarm game on Thursday, I was feeling pretty good about giving him Foreman, but Foreman did nothing at all against the Steelers. This is a Mike Tomlin special, right? He goes on the road as an underdog. The Steelers are going nowhere. Carolina's got the whiff of maybe winning that division, and the Steelers dominate this game pretty much A to Z. Harris looked good. Jaylen Warren looked good. Trubisky didn't give the game away. You know, you just want him to play an error-free game. It's a cherry on top that he got 8.1 YPA, but he doesn't take a sack. He doesn't turn, you know, takes one sack, doesn't turn the ball over, even ran in a touchdown. And he got the ball. You know, Deontay Johnson keeps motoring along, man, catches all 10 of his targets, none of them for a touchdown. So now I believe it's 123 targets without a touchdown, which is far and away the most in NFL history. He's pushed Michael Timpson far into second place. It's just the key for Johnson is not to score a touchdown for the next 3 weeks. What are the Steelers stuck on 9 touchdown passes for the season? That is mind-blowing. One of them from Chase Claypool, by the way.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, that's right. Chase Claypool threw a touchdown. That's unbelievable. Man, Deontay Johnson had a sequence where, you know, I've been saying this on pods all year, like guy just runs to the side, like run upfield when you get the ball after the catch. He does it near scoring area, Scott, but he eventually gets the first down, fights for extra yards. The exact thing I want to see him do. He gets up and taunts the player, and they bring the play back 15 yards. I mean, I think the taunting rule, it's like, is stupid, but come on, bro. Come on, man. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see if Deontay Johnson gets in the end zone. I don't have a lot of faith in the Steelers passing offense to get it done, though.
I wish you could just bet on him not to score a touchdown. I mean, granted, the odds would be like minus 480 or minus 500 or something like that. But you should never bet a lot to win a little. That's one of the first rules of gambling. Oh, I'll bet, you know, this thing is such a sure thing. You know, I'll just bet, you know, minus 1,000 or something. No, don't do that. Deontay Johnson might be the exception to that rule. If I can get a no prop on him, I might just bet it just for the fun of it.
I mean, it is pretty crazy that we're at this point. It's just wild. All right. Next game up here. We're speeding through this, man. Love to see it. Broncos 24, Cardinals 15. I thought for a second there, Scott, your 10-12 prediction for this game was live. It didn't end up happening. The only thing, I mean, I don't care too much about these two teams. You know, Colt McCoy ends up leaving the game. Like, we might guess Trace McSorley next week. That's frightening for your fantasy teams if you got these pass catchers out there. I will tell you, though, Scott, you know what I did again this week? I picked Greg Dulcich and Dawson Knox wrong. I started Greg Dulcich and predictably got that bad boy wrong. Got 2.1 points out of him against the Cardinals. Dawson Knox, literally like the inverse of that, gets like 21 points. So I continue to toil with this tight end situation.
Yeah, I picked up Dulcich in a league, in a deeper league, and put him in there. And so as a penance, you and I can watch his two targets and his one catch for 11 yards on coaching tape. Won't take very long to do. Yeah. Like 90 seconds to do that. But Latavius Murray, you know, 30-year-old Jerick McKinnon, what's Latavius, 31 or 32? He looked pretty good in this game. Not that the Cardinals defense is anything special, but I mean, we'll take 25 touches, 24 carries. We know whether it's Rippon, whether it's Russell Wilson, whoever's playing next week, they don't want to throw the ball. They have a good defense. So Latavius Murray is probably going to be like running back 14 next week on my board. I feel uncomfortable saying that, but that's where we are. He's got a market share. And, you know, Marlon Mack sprinkled in a little bit. He had a couple of catches, 5 carries. He did get a touchdown. But Murray's got basically a backfield to himself, and that has fantasy value.
A couple other things on the Broncos, because, man, I mean, as sad as the Broncos are, the Cardinals might be even more of a mess right now. Again, they're going to be starting Trace McSorley, and we know there's a lot of off-field stuff going on with them. Kyler Murray out for the year. You know, it goes on and on and on. A couple of things. Jerry Jeudy, like when he starts and finishes a game, I think Jerry Judy's still not like a perfect player or anything like that. Obviously, I made the kind of evaluation of him with Rich Rebar on the show last week, but 7 catches, 76 yards. When Cortland Sutton's not in there, the offense is constricted enough to just Jerry Jeudy, and I think he's quietly had a, you know, a little bit better of a season, I think, than a lot of people expected. So Jerry Jeudy, I'm interested to see if like he gets traded in the offseasons on a new team, whatever. And one last thing, shout out to Nathaniel Hackett. You cannot blame me for doing this. Haven't been that dialed in on Broncos games live. I didn't realize, Scott, he's grown out like a goatee. He's doing the changing his appearance at the end of a dysfunctional relationship. So shout out to Nathaniel Hackett for that.
Oh, I like that. He should show up at games in incognito, right? You know, with a disguise on or something like that. Man, 2 more teams. I can't wait to pull the plug.
Yeah.
I will say this. James Conner never comes off the field. He never seeds Ingram had another game with 1 carry. So Conner, you get 19 touches. It's classic James Conner line, right? 16 for 63, less than 4 carry, but he gets a short touchdown. He catches 3 passes. So he's probably going to end the week as like running back 13. That's totally, and you never got the feeling that he played well,
No. That
he was really that much of a factor in the game. But, you know, they're going to use him no matter what, even though they're probably down to 3rd-string quarterback. And I give Jeudy 7 for 76 on 8 Brett Rippon targets. That's a pretty good game. I mean, if you play Jeudy, I don't know how much more you didn't get the touchdowns you got last week, but I feel like Judy's at least outkicked his coverage the last couple of games. And that's, if you needed to go that deep, you got some return on it.
Yeah, like it would have been tough to expect a 3 touchdown performance again, but this was a perfectly fine encore for him. All right, Scott, last thing here. We're not going to go game by game Saturday, but I just want to kind of get your general takes. I'm sure like me, you could just yes or no on this one. You got anything on the Browns and Ravens, man? I mean, these two teams, just the Ravens are in preseason mode and the Browns kind of are what they are right now. Like I got some thoughts on the 1st and 3rd game, but not the 2nd.
Yeah, I don't have much to offer you on any of the Saturday games. Other than I thought Dobbins looked good. He's playable. I thought Huntley was let down by his receivers. When Deshaun Watson plays well, I'll let you know. I haven't seen it yet. The Ravens, I thought, actually were the better team in this game and should have won. The most interesting thing to me about the Vikings and Colts game, historic comeback and all that, is that Osborne got all those targets and Thielen only had 4. Osborne, I think, had 16 targets and Thielen had 4. So maybe there's a case to be made that Osborne has passed Thielen in the pecking order. At least he's a mouth to feed. So that we have to consider that. Buffalo-Miami is just a good reminder that they can tell you Snowmageddon's coming and it's going to be a nor'easter and it's going to be nasty. Yeah. Why aren't they building a dome in Buffalo? And then they played the game and the weather didn't affect the game at all. I actually benched, not that Jason Sanders is a great kicker, but he was my kicker in a 20-team league. And I cut him and picked up Pinero of the Panthers. It turned out being close to a wash. I think Sanders was end up being the right play, but I didn't want to mess with the weather. Probably the right move, right? I mean, just in case that game did get out of hand weather-wise, at least I was free of it. But All the passing elements, you know, Josh Allen was fine. Tyreek Hill was fine. Jalen Waddle had a huge game. I mean, you know, it just goes to show you how often we worry about weather. And here's the bottom line. And I'm not saying the extreme is ever the right answer here. But if you were going to err on the side of always panicking towards weather or being proactive towards weather or just ignoring it, I think you'd come up so far ahead if you just ignored it.
Yep, I think so, too. I mean, I definitely was a little worried about like some, not like to the point where, okay, you got to bench Jalen Waddle, you got to bench Tua, but like Tua, we had concerns about anyways, right? Like going into this game, but I feel better about it. I wouldn't say that the Bills, like they didn't really take too much of the game plan from like the Chargers really. Like they tried to pass off the guys in zone coverage, which is, you know, what the Bills do. They're a very zone-heavy team. They rely on a lot of communication. Tre'Davious White definitely does not look right, which is, you know, he's another one of these guys coming back from a later ACL. He tore it on Thanksgiving last year. I think coming back at cornerback probably has got to be even tougher than wide receiver, right? So he was certainly exposed at times in this game. But I don't know, man, just I thought this was such a fun game. Like it was one of the games I enjoyed the most watching this year. And I watched it over at a couple friends' house. So it was just the snow part of it was awesome. I definitely, I don't want to get into the arguments with people who are like, I hate the snow or whatever. Like, I personally enjoy it. I think it adds something to it. And I don't know, it just looked cool seeing Josh Allen out there in the snow doing his thing. And like you said, it didn't really take away from the game at all. In fact, I think it added like certain elements to it.
Every game that has snow ends up being kind of a magical game to watch. Yeah, I always, whenever there's,
yeah, I agree.
Teams, some teams should play outside. You know, I don't want everybody to go indoors. I don't want football just to be perfect elements. I think it made sense that they had that one Super Bowl in New Jersey. I wouldn't mind if they did another one of those every once in a while. It's going to be part of it. Buffalo, and yeah, it's a cold weather city. You know, somebody tweeted that I think it was Mina Kimes was talking about this on one of her shows, that people who live in cold weather cities love to talk to you about how weather tough they are. It's like, oh, you know, it's 40 degrees out, I'll break out my cargo shorts, whatever it is. But Buffalo should play outside. I have no problem with that. And this was a really fun game with lead. What makes sports exciting is lead changes, where you don't know who's going to win, where one team seems like they're in control of the game, then it flips back and forth. Yeah. And it was just good to see Miami back off the restricted list. Mostert had a great game. Tua, I thought, played pretty well. Not great. I mean, Tua always leaves a couple of plays on the field, but whatever. You could say that about 90% of the quarterbacks anyway. And then, you know, Josh Allen had the answers at the end. And once again, if you're trying to find answers in the Bills' backfield, you just end up being disappointed. I had to play Singletary in a league, and I was like, just get me 8 points. And he got me something like 7 or 8 points. I'm like, okay, that's all I wanted. I know you have no upside. Just try to hit your floor, and I can live with you.
It's funny. In a weird way, Scott, like, this game, and again, obviously weather, whatever, I would say that the Dolphins in this game looked the most like what I thought a Mike McDaniel offense would look like, because they ran the ball extremely well. You know, Mostert looked great. Like, they looked like they had a lot of communication going well, an offensive line that's, you know, kind of in flux, right? I don't know. I can't, again, I came away from it. And same thing too, from like the Tua perspective, he was like, you know, taking some shots, right? Like, I don't know. It's, again, it just looked like the offense I kind of thought that Mike McDaniel would coordinate. And what we got the early part of the year is not that type of offense. So I was kind of looking for, like, what's the counterpunch for Miami? I don't know if I want to take it, like, all the way that this is going to be it. But I did feel very encouraged that they came out with this game plan against a good defense and they executed it. I weirdly just feel better about both teams and both offenses coming out of this game, especially just because, I mean, that was probably the best game I think Josh Allen's played in like a month plus, just kind of putting everything on his shoulders.
Yeah, well said. I will close with this, and I don't know how this is going to hold up, but I was apologizing this whole podcast for Stevenson. I know one of the players I was having people bench Stevenson for is Brian Robinson Jr. of Washington. And as we're taping this, it's late in the second quarter. Giants, Commodores, Commanders, whatever they call that team. And Robinson's sitting on 8 for 54 rushing and 1 for 18 receiving. And he's not halfway to Stevenson, but it's possible that the Robinson over Stevenson call may ultimately at least be a little less painful, or maybe even a wash. So hopefully Robinson will punch in a touchdown the second half. But hoping he gets there. You, dear listener, have all the answers now. So by now you know that Brian Robinson has run for 350 yards and he's on the cover of every fantasy website in the business. Or, you know, who knows, maybe he's in fumble jail because he put the ball on the ground in the third quarter. I don't know. You have the answer. You have the 2020 vision. We don't. But I'll be pulling for him the rest of the night to make that Stevenson call a little bit less painful.
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott, no matter how much pain Ramondre Stevenson has you in, you can't be in any more pain than Matt Ryan, who's now a part of the biggest comeback, on the wrong end of the biggest comeback in Super Bowl history and regular season NFL history. So at least you're not in that kind of pain, Scott, with this whole Ramondre Stevenson thing.
Man, yeah, what is it with the Colts and finishing games? They allow, 33 points, I think it was, to the Cowboys in that crazy fourth quarter, and then the Vikings get 22 in the fourth quarter on Saturday and 36 in the second half.
Well, the high school offense hasn't translated for Jeff Saturday, I guess. The high school game management hasn't translated to the big leagues here for Jeff. So maybe that's,
I mean, what a no-show for. I thought Paris Campbell and Alec Pierce were playable against Minnesota. I mean, you know, playable if you're in a pinch, right? Because the Minnesota secondary was horrible, but nobody really gets there. Even Pittman. You told me Pittman had 14 targets against Minnesota. I'm like, okay, what do you have? 200 yards? 150 yards? Well, 100, right? No, 10 for 60.
That's like a big targets. Michael Pittman game in this Colts offense. So that's a God. I'm ready to be done with.
They're going to draft a quarterback, you think?
I would assume so. I don't think they can go down.
They have their pick, right? So they're going to have pep choice of a lot of good ones, or they can even move up. There'll be some teams picking early that don't or they don't think they need a quarterback. So maybe they'll make a pitch for somebody. But, you know, they've been trying this. The Colts have been trying this retrade, you know, this Philip Rivers and Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan. I mean, they've gone that route. And it hasn't worked out at this point. You know, blow it up and go with somebody new. Go with a young kid and hope you find the right answer.
Well, we know you all have the right answers, and we appreciate you listening. That is going to do it for us. Make sure you're following Scott on Twitter at Scott_Pianowski. And being, you know, if you're going to give him crap for the Ramondre Stevenson thing, you better be nice.
Give me all the crap you want. I don't care. I'll take it. Just I'll say this. I always respect the person who says beforehand, this call is ridiculous. You know, afterwards, yeah, we all know what's ridiculous and what isn't, but I'll take it. I'm trying to give you guys the best advice I can. So, you know, I welcome whatever discourse you want to throw my way. I'll try to be reasonable about it as long as you try to be reasonable about it.
Well, as long as you're okay with ridiculousness, you can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattHarmon_BYB. And of course, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy as well. If you need waiver wire help this week, God help you, I guess. Well, Andy Behrens will be there to help you tomorrow. We'll be back with that show. Until then, we're out.